Be good.
Well, hello there, friends. Thanks for tuning in to the Monkey Tooth Podcast. It's your pal, Andrew, and my wife, Tiffany, and our little dog, Pele, are bringing this thing to you every week. And yes, there is a small dog involved in this podcast, and let me tell you, he plays an enormous role. All right, today's guest is Laura Austin. Laura is a friggin' incredible photographer. She's a very inspiring person, industrious, smart, charming, and a blast to be around. I'm going to tell you a little bit about her, but I'll give you the backstory. We met her through our friends Tal Ruspoli and Dr. Chris Ryan. She's friends with both of those guys, and came over to Tal's house where we had been house sitting for about a month for New Year's Eve. And within about 10 minutes of talking to Laura, I wanted to have her on this podcast. She is just a smart, funny lady who just seemed interesting to me. I had no idea that she's also kind of a big deal. I didn't really learn that until much later into hanging out with her. She's not boastful. She's not overly proud. She doesn't feel the need to tell you every single awesome thing she's ever done, which are numerous and impressive. She was just like this unfolding, interesting person. Even after the podcast, I continued to learn tons and tons and tons more about her as the weekend unfolded, and I'm so happy to be able to share with you just this tiny sliver of what a cool lady she is. Anyhow, you got to go to her website, lauraaustinphoto.com. She's got an incredible book out called Solo. She's got wonderful videos up of a project she did with Airstream. She generates fantastic stuff, has done interesting things, and is cool about it. So check her out. Tell her what you think. Tell me what you think. mtp.dog is a great place to get in touch with us. There's a contact page. We've got all kinds of other content up there. And we also have an opportunity via a small clickable link where you can become a patron for as little as $1 a month. You can support our crazy journey and make sure that that little dog continues to get paid. Because if not, there's no telling. Actually, he may fire us. We don't know. He's just barely loyal. Anyhow, we love you out there. I hope you're doing fun and interesting things. And I hope you enjoy this episode as much as I did, because it was a blast. Okay, moving on. Take care. Until next time, here is Laura Austin. Okay. Get some levels here. Just give me your ABCs or something.
A, B, C, D, E, F, G.
Perfect. Do I know my ABCs? Hello. Hello, I can't say my ABCs. I'm too dumb to sing. I like that you immediately sang it. That probably tells a lot about a person if you ask them to give you the ABCs and they sing it.
And they sing it. I just know it as a song.
It is. Isn't it also like, or is it three? Which one's another song? It's like they're all the same song.
Oh,
like Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star and the ABCs.
Oh, yeah.
The same
they're
tune.
They're exactly the same.
Yeah. I think that's like, if you sing your ABCs at like one of those like drunk DUI checkpoints or something like that. Like, give me your ABCs backwards and you have to sing it backwards.
That would be very, I wouldn't be able to do that.
Yeah, that would be pretty badass.
I couldn't do that sober.
that's how they get you. If you're like, man, I couldn't do that sober. Like,
exactly.
Get in the car, fucker. You're busted. Laura Austin, where are you from?
I am originally from Colorado. I lived there till I was 13.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the age of 13, my mom decided she wanted to move to Vermont. So she just scooped me up and my stepdad, and we moved to Vermont, and I spent my high school years there.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Were you in Bernie's district?
I don't know if Bernie was a politician when I was in high school. No, I lived in a small town called Stowe. I grew up in a small mountain town, so.
S-T-O-W?
S-T-O-W-E.
Oh, E.
Yeah.
They put the E on there so it doesn't just seem like you're putting shit in town.
Exactly.
Stowe. So it's like somebody's last name or something.
I assume Stowe. So. I don't know the etymology of
Stowe. That's cool. Well, This interview is over.
It's been great. Thanks. Awesome. Thanks, Andrew.
So why Vermont? Your mom just likes being cold?
Well, Colorado was cold too.
Yeah.
Vermont, her and my stepdad went on a vacation out there, and she just decided that they wanted to move to Vermont and get out of Colorado. So my dad still lived in Colorado, so I went back and forth between Colorado and Vermont throughout my teenage years.
Do you identify with any of those states or?
Funny enough, I have a weird distaste for Colorado. I just would never want to live there again. It's a beautiful place. I was just there last week for the holidays. It's a beautiful place. Vermont has a character and charm to it.
It seems like whereas Colorado would be kind of new agey and airy fairy.
Yeah.
Vermont's like got a crotchety and seasoned
sort
of thing.
There's more history there, and Colorado just is dirt and rocks to me, which is beautiful, but the seasons in Vermont are insane. I don't know if you spent a fall on the East Coast, but
I have. Yeah. It's nice.
It's hard.
It's quite nice.
Yes. It's hard to beat that.
And it's a definite shift in gears as far as the season goes. It's not, it's unambiguous. Like, okay, it's fall.
Right, exactly. And when I moved to LA from Vermont, I went through withdrawals of
seasonal
seasons.
Withdrawal. Yeah, that's the thing. So you live in LA right now.
Yeah.
On purpose.
Yeah. It just kind of happened. But yeah.
All right. So I've gotten that out of my mind. Well, what did your folks do? What did your mom do?
I consider both my parents creatives in their own sort of way. Okay. They both started their own businesses. My dad is an interior woodworker, so he has an interior woodworking company where he builds giant log homes in the mountains in Colorado. And then my mom had her own outdoor apparel company. So she sewed all the stuff herself and made stuff for biking in the winter and first layer for skiing, a lot of fleece garments. So they were self-starters and turned their passion into a career, which was very, I think, influential for me.
Yeah. Did you learn either of those crafts? Are you good at sewing or building or?
I can dabble. I can use a sewing machine and I could nail in a piece of wood.
Oh, there you go. So you're familiar enough with each one of them to be able to...
Correct. Yeah. I could build a birdhouse.
Okay. And sew a little curtain on the front.
Exactly.
That sounds great.
Exactly.
I wonder why there aren't curtains on birdhouses.
I don't know.
You think they would freak them out?
Probably. I don't think they'd willingly go in.
We should run a
willingly go
test.
In it. We should. Yeah. I'm down.
Okay. No birds have come in here.
No. Yet. No, that's true. And there's a little
A little curtain.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So that says it. So you moved... Have you done a lot of traveling before you moved to LA, or how long have you been in LA?
I've been in LA. Well, I've been in California since 2008. I moved from Vermont when I was 18 to California. I went to college for just a semester for graphic design, and a semester into college, I was offered a job in California doing what I would have wanted to do once I graduated.
Okay.
So left one semester into college and moved to California. To work at this company, Quicksilver.
Oh, yeah, the surf apparel thing. Yeah.
Yep. So I was a graphic designer there for 2 years, and then I can progress through my career. But
Keep going.
Okay. But I was 18 working in a very, a small cubicle. All of my jobs would be handed to me in a manila folder. I could go an entire day without talking to a single person. It was a huge corporate company.
Yeah.
And I stood back, and I'm still a teenager, and I'm already working a desk job, and I just, it wasn't for me. I woke up and I love graphic design, but I don't want to be stuck behind a computer. So growing up in the small mountain towns I grew up in, Colorado and Vermont, my life revolved around snowboarding. And there was a job opening at one of the big snowboard magazines called Snowboarder for an online editor. And so I applied for the job and I got it. And there I did a lot of writing and shooting photos and managing the website and stuff, but I got to travel around the world snowboarding, which was awesome.
Yeah.
I did that till I was 22, and the world of snowboarding became a little bit too much of a niche. My focus shifted to photography, and in snowboarding, when you're shooting people, they're normally far off in the distance, covered in outerwear. You can barely see the human, and I was more interested in the personalities behind all the snowboard clothes, and it, the magazine I worked for didn't really want to focus on that. It was more about the
sales.
It was very manly. So I quit the magazine in 2012, and then moved up to LA.
Okay.
I just dropped everything and said, I'm going to be a photographer and I'll hope that it works out. And I've been doing that for the past 7 years now.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it's working.
It's working.
Yeah.
I've turned it into a career, but now I'm at an interesting transition point where I've done commercial photography for quite a while, and I'm trying to figure out what is the next progression of that, because I tend to not, judging by my career paths, I tend to not be able to sit in one place for too long.
That's perfectly understandable. You're talking to the right guy.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
I get it. So your most recent project with the Airstream, can you tell me about that?
Yeah. So I went through something recently where I didn't know if I wanted to live in LA anymore, but I didn't know where I would want to go. So I'm like, how can I devise a plan where I can just travel around the country for a while and see if any place grabs me? And road tripping has been my thing for quite a while, but that generally is out of my car, and I go for maybe a week or two, and I'm staying in motels or hotels along the way. But to do a bit of a longer trip, I thought it would be really fun to have an Airstream. And so through the grapevine, I got some contacts there. And emailed them, and little did I know, they actually have a program called Endless Caravan, and where people, you have to fill out this really long questionnaire and kind of propose a project. And my whole thing is solo travel, and especially I think they gravitated towards that because a young female who wanted to travel alone, and like the whole female empowerment thing happening, they signed off on it, and I received they came out with a new trailer called The Nest, which is a small 16-foot fiberglass trailer that I could pull with. I have an Audi Q5, so a lightweight trailer that you can pull with a small SUV. So I got the trailer for 2 months and traveled around the country by myself, did over 10,000 miles. I forget how many states I covered, but I got to completely plan my route, I gravitate towards nature, so most of my stops were based around national parks, and then just kind of figuring out what I could see in between those.
And do you, I know you said just now that you'd focus on nature, but you also were saying earlier that you would get, in those commercial shoots, like bummed out at just shooting jackets, and you were more interested in the person in the jacket, Did you do any of that? Did you focus on some people? Did you meet some characters?
Or? Yeah. I went into the trip with a project in mind called I Am Human, and that project was going to be based around just finding different people who fit under certain stereotypes. So find someone who is I'm a veteran, I'm Republican, I'm Democrat, I am Black, I'm white, and asking them questions that have nothing to do, like I wouldn't want to ask a Republican what he thinks of Democrats. I would want to ask him questions like, what did you want to be as a kid? What are your hopes? What are your fears? What are your dreams?
I should write these down because I need to get better at this. Sounds like you're already.
No. But the attempt with that project was to humanize people and make people realize, like, at the root of it, we all want the same things. We want to be happy. We want to feel safe. And we want to feel like we have opportunity.
I want to live. I want to give. I've been a miner for a heart of gold. If these expressions I never give, it keeps me searching for heart of gold. And I'm getting old. It keeps me searching for heart.
So I went into this trip with the hopes of doing that project, but the demands for Airstream were pretty intense. I had to write a blog post a week and shoot photos. And while you're traveling nonstop, because I had a kind of a schedule I was following personally, it was hard for me to sit in one place long enough to whether I was filming these videos or editing them. So I only did a couple of those interviews along the way, but that's a project I want to continue.
I know all about that.
Yeah.
We put out a weekly podcast.
Yeah.
Write a journal. But I'm doing it without the benefit of any sponsorship. We had to build our own band.
Yeah, well,
I think I did this all wrong.
I think if you build it, they will come. If you're putting out quality stuff, I think quality, authentic, genuine content, I think it will come to you.
Fingers crossed.
You're on your way.
Yeah. So that was this summer? And you just wrapped it up when?
I started the trip in May, I believe. Mm-hmm. Started it in April and ended at the end of May.
Cool.
So 2 solid months by myself. But along the way, also Christopher Ryan, who I believe you've interviewed, he gave me a lot of interesting people since he's traveled around and interviewed tons of interesting people. He actually gave me a lot of people to stop and visit along the way, which was great.
So enormous. He changed the entire, tone and texture and trajectory of our journey in an enormous way. I mean, we're literally sitting in here because of Chris Ryan.
Exactly. So, but cheers, Chris.
Cheers to that guy.
Thank you.
Yeah.
But it was nice to have friends who, like, in New Orleans, for example, one of my best friends in LA, her husband is from New Orleans. So she connected me. She's like, you have to meet up with this person. And through the grapevine, one of the guy in New Orleans, sorry, this is kind of a windy story, but the friend in New Orleans that she introduced me to, one of his best friends was a commercial alligator hunter.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't really care about spending time on Bourbon Street or whatever. Really want to go in the bayous.
Yeah.
So just happenstance, they're like, you want to go catch an alligator? You want to go to the swamps? And I was like, yes. So we went, we drove into the swamps into area that I don't think many tourists would go to. Oh,
man. And down there in May, in April and May, it's like the perfect time of year to be there.
So green.
Yeah.
But we drove into the swamps, shot guns for a little while, and then went out into the waters of the bayou and actually caught an alligator. And I held a 3 foot alligator, and those things are really strong.
Super strong.
Yeah.
Did you have to hold its mouth shut, or did they
No, I didn't even hold the mouth. I held it behind its head and its tail.
Just to feel the weight of it?
Yeah. Well, no, I held it for a picture.
Oh, shit.
And then he was like, when you throw it back in, pull your hands back as fast as you possibly can, because they can whip around really quickly and grab your hand.
Yeah.
But it was worth it for the picture.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it was very cool.
Wow. And how did they capture it? What was...
I don't think I'm at liberty to describe the whole process.
Really?
No, they put something on the end of a fishing line.
Mm-hmm. Chicken or some shit.
Right? It was basically a rubber duck.
Oh.
And seriously. And then would cast it out next to the alligator and then reel it in before they could actually bite it.
Yeah.
To lure the alligator close to the boat and then scoop it up with a net.
So a carrot is to a mule what a rubber duck is to
an alligator? I guess so.
Man, the shit that you learn out there in the world.
Exactly.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So, we lived in New Orleans for about 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Loved it. Absolutely loved it. But our experience with getting on the bayou, we did one airboat tour.
Okay.
And then we just would ride our bikes around places in the bayou and stuff.
Oh, amazing.
And from New Orleans, you can on a 25-minute bike ride suddenly be seeing alligators.
Yeah, kind of slightly terrifying, but
amazing.
Also amazing.
Yeah, it's great.
The South was unexplored territory for me before this trip. One of the areas I was most excited to go through was the South.
Where all did you go?
My mom lives in South Carolina, so I had to pick up the trailer in Ohio. That's where the Airstream headquarters is. And then I kind of beelined it down to South Carolina to see my mom. And then from there, I went through Alabama, Louisiana, and then from there... Louisiana borders Texas, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then from there into the very tip of Texas, went down to this amazing little town called Terlingua, right next to Big Bend National Park.
Super cool.
Have you been there?
Mm-hmm.
Have you met Jeff Leach?
I didn't meet Jeff. No. Like down in, we went to Marfa.
Okay.
We rode our bikes across Texas.
Oh,
and,
amazing.
Which was so much cooler than it sounds, because people are like, oh my God, I was on I-10 for half my life and I hate it.
But when you're biking.
Yeah, if you take your time, it's amazing. Yeah. Cool. We didn't go to Terlingua. We went to Marfa and like that area around Big Bend. I definitely want to go back and go to Terlingua and go.
It's a special little place. Like Marfa's cool. It's a little hoity-toity, but amazing. Like I love Marfa. I was like, I want to move here. But then I went to Terlingua. I'm like, no, I actually want to live
here. So Chris hooked you up with Jeff Leach.
Yes.
That's great.
And that whole crew. Yeah. And I spent more time than I was planning in that town because they just welcomed me in with open arms. Like, backyard, or there isn't really yards in Terlingua, but barbecues and going into the park, and they just welcomed me with open arms.
I wonder, so we met this woman, we just happened to see her at a laundromat and noticed that she had Tennessee tags, and from the same county that I have a house in Memphis. And so we started chatting her up, and she lived in Terlingua for a while and knew all those same people. Amy Bell, I think is her name.
I don't know if I met her. It's a really...
A dog named Bandit. Are you one of those people who remember people's dogs?
I feel like I met Bandit.
Yeah.
It's funny that I know a dog's
old
name.
Dog that seems young.
Yeah, I believe that I met a lot of people at once. But
Funny.
It was a very interesting, small little ghost town that is completely unsuspecting, but just filled with the most interesting people.
Yeah, it's on my list of places to go back because we didn't make it to the park when we were there. It was out of our way to go to Marfa.
Yeah,
like we could have gone straight across or ducked down 90 miles. We took the duck down 90 miles. We should have gone even further, but
you were on bikes.
That's the thing on a bike, like
you can't just easily veer off.
Yeah,
like, I'm just gonna take a 50-mile detour.
Yeah, and there was, you know, like to get from Marfa back to the next town, there was a 90-mile stretch of nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Like just, I mean, nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. Such a weird thing to think about. Like, but you're just going to be on your bike for 90 miles and, you know, you got your own water, you're fine. But like,
That's
next
that's
time
intense.
we'll drive down.
Yeah. Driving through Texas, I highly recommend going down there. And there's definitely a lot of good podcast material.
Yeah. Sounds like
town.
It. My, Tiffany's from Austin.
Okay.
And she's spent a lot of time, you know, in various parts of Texas, but Texas is one of those places that you associate it with whatever. I mean, if you just say Texas, people are like, toast, rednecks, fucking guns, you know, like they just, if you do one of those word association games. But when people ask me about Texas, I think of, the Seminole Canyon, which has these ancient cave paintings.
Yeah.
And I think of like rolling hills and beautiful, streams running through places. I mean, it's
such a big state.
Yeah.
You can't stereotype any state really, but
you can because it's funny.
Well, course, like people do it, but Texas isn't just one thing.
No.
I had that coming from Colorado. We always made fun of the Texans
because
they were the kind of the kooks who came up to ski, and there's a thing called the Texan tuck where people would stick their ski poles under their arms when they were going down like a flat area and have their butt up in the air, and it's just like the most. That person's
that's
from Texas. So I kind of had a bad taste, or just kind of stereotyped Texas before I really explored it. But this trip completely disproved all those.
That's, you know, one of the most valuable things about travel for me is finding out just how wrong about shit I am.
Exactly.
And if you're willing to admit that, which sounds like you are.
Oh, completely. I'll openly admit, yes, going in just the South in general, I kind of had this certain idea of like it's going to be toothless people sitting on their porch drinking sweet tea.
Yeah, which you can find.
I'm sure. And I wish I went deeper in to find those like deliverance type areas.
Right.
But everyone was just so incredibly friendly along the whole trip. Because on this trip, I stood out because I would pull up in front of a restaurant with a trailer behind my car. And I was a young little blonde girl walking out and going
in
to
a jumpsuit. Did you wear the jumpsuit?
There was a jumpsuit quite often.
God, I've not asked anybody to do a wardrobe change for a photo, but I really want a photo of you in that jumpsuit.
I will happily put on the jumpsuit for you.
Yes.
Because
it will make no sense right now, me just talking about this. It's a podcast or a jumpsuit not made for podcasts.
Exactly.
It's made for the real, gotta see it.
Exactly.
But so you were standing out.
I stood out and I'd go in, particularly in, I went to Biloxi because I had never had crawfish before. So I went to Biloxi on my way to New Orleans and I was like, I need to stop and eat crawfish because apparently that's what you do there. And went into this restaurant and I've found, or I asked around, and what's like the most authentic, like where do the locals go, and found this restaurant and walked in, and I think all the tables around me heard me ask the waitress how to eat these things, and then it perpetuated into like everyone around me helping me and like giving me their tips, and then the conversation evolved into is that your trailer outside, and then just they learned my life story and I learned their life story, and that's the coolest thing for me when I travel alone, is that I'm not distracted by someone else's company. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of forced to interact with the people I'm surrounded by. So I'm a bit of an introvert. So if I was with one person, I would probably just keep to like the person I know, but this intentionally forces me out of my comfort zone.
Yeah.
Which is cool. I think when you have to overcome hardships, that's when you learn, and every time I go on a solo road trip, I don't know what I'm going to have to overcome, but I know that it's going to have to be something. So it's like my intentional growth trip, basically.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
That there's a weird calculus in there. So one is, one person is vulnerable yet approachable.
Right.
You know, and two people, or a group of people, it gets weird, right?
Right.
But if you add in one dog, or one child, suddenly two people are way more approachable.
Right.
It's a strange thing that Tiff and I have discovered on this trip, like, because we have this dog with us that we did not intend on taking with us.
Yeah.
And the dog has created all these opportunities that we are definitely more introverted.
Yeah.
And it would be difficult for me to always ask people to do this podcast. You know?
Right.
But having the dog with us creates this other, like, oh, look at these idiots and their dog. Well, let's talk to them. You know?
Right, yeah. And people want to come up and pet the dog, and then that's just an icebreaker.
They're suddenly in there, yeah.
Yeah. I've had a lot of people say, like, because there's a lot of, or a few people that I know who travel around alone and they have their dog. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like a marketing tool. Like, they shoot their dog.
Yeah, totally.
And I've had a lot of people say, like, you should get a dog. I'm like, I travel too much that doesn't involve a car for me to practically have a dog.
So in the solo travel for you, I want to get to that in a second.
Okay.
But I also want to kind of finish where all you went. Like, you went in the south and went through Texas.
Went through Texas. Like I said, did Marfa, Terlingua, Austin, and then from there I actually beelined it from Texas to Joshua Tree.
Oh, nice.
Stopped here for a couple days, just because I figured Tao would want to see the trailer, and it was just like a nice, for me, Joshua Tree was a nice transition from being alone. I was on the road for almost a month up until that point, and I was alone, and I knew I was going to LA and back into like city life. So Joshua Tree was a nice kind of transition. Like, okay, this is something that's familiar, but I'm not fully in the city yet.
It's a little both.
Yeah, exactly. So I spent a couple days here and then LA, and then up the entire, went to Big Sur, actually met up with Chris Ryan. Him and a friend met me with their van, and we just had like a little powwow for a minute, which was great. And Big Sur is great because the pullouts all along the coast, you're actually allowed to camp there and stay there overnight, which is amazing. Big Sur is, out of all my travels, still one of the most special places I've ever been.
So beautiful.
And then from there, all the way up the California coast through the Redwoods, Oregon, Crater Lake.
Wow. Love Crater Lake.
Crater Lake was very cool. It was winter. There was still a lot of snow up there when I went, surprisingly. So I didn't get a hike around as much as I wanted to, but I did trek up through the snow to just get a nice view of the lake.
So magical.
So cool. Beautiful. And then from there, spent a couple days in Portland. Mm-hmm. So I have some friends in Portland, and then went up into Washington to this amazing waterfall, which was completely off my radar. I'm blanking on the name of it off the top of my head right now. And then through Idaho, went to Craters of the Moon, which is it's an area in Idaho that's all like affected by volcanic activity. So a lot of the rock there is black. Like, there's this amazing, it's called the volcano cone, and it's this big giant mound of just flat black rock. And as a photographer, like, I love blank, stark, wide open landscapes. So like this black cone that I ended up shooting myself running up and stuff was amazing. Then went to some natural hot springs from there, and then went to South Dakota. What's the the national park in South Dakota.
There's the Crazy Horse?
No.
There's the Rushmore. None of that. Is that North Dakota? I can't remember now.
Dakotas.
Why do they have to make two of them?
I know. I'm completely blank. We went through South Dakota to a national park there. I'm blanking on the name at the moment.
And Badlands?
Badlands.
Okay.
Yes. Is that in South or North?
I don't know.
I can't keep track.
My geography's for shit. Tiffany would know. She'll fact check. She'll be, come on, how do you not know this? People are screaming into their headphones.
I'm embarrassed. I couldn't even remember Badlands. Then from there, had to drop off the trailer in Colorado.
Cool.
So,
yeah. Wow. That's an awesome little trip.
It was
10,000 plus miles in 2 months.
Yeah. So since I wanted to bite off so much, there was a lot of driving, a lot of days that I just have to drive straight for 8 hours a day. I mean, I'm sure you can, you can relate.
I can relate. Yeah. There's some days that are just chock full of all kinds of fun, weird little experiences. And some days you're just driving.
Right.
That's all right.
Yeah. But with your trip, do you kind of have a date you need to be in? You're going to Argentina, right?
Yeah, I mean, we're stopping for 3 months at this point to work, you know,
right,
just to like refill the coffers after, you know, it's not fair to call it tragedies or even disasters, and just shit happened and we just gotta, you know, it's no big deal. We just gotta make a little bit of money and turn around and do it again.
But then I think from my perspective, that provides you with these beautiful experiences, like, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we have no, it's all, even going back to work is as much a part of the journey as like showing up in, you know, Oaxaca or something. You
exactly.
know, it's all part of.
Exactly.
To me, the moment you say, I'm taking that journey, you're on that journey.
Completely. Like,
it doesn't matter if you're at McDonald's and you're working a shift.
Mm-hmm.
If halfway through waiting on the fries to come out, you're like, you know what? I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
You're on that journey to do that.
Exactly.
You know? And that's, it's so liberating, and it's why I think we're, and you seem like the kind of person who's like always on some sort of journey.
Yeah, completely.
I don't know.
Just kind of have to surrender the experience and have trust in it and just go along for the ride, really.
And never be bored.
Yes, exactly. Only boring people are bored.
I can't contain the emotion, get it out of my mind. I can bend the rules with primitive tools and stutters. I feel right at home beside the woodshed. Give as good as I do get. And I heart the part when you play the concerned friend.
Journey sounds like, I mean, so we've talked to a couple of people who travel solo in their trailers.
Cool.
Our friend Amy Bell,
okay,
with Bandit, is in a little tab trailer,
right,
riding around and with the Subaru, and that's it, you know, just and like she said, the same sort of thing that you said yesterday, like it's like I just have a little luxury hotel room
behind my car, which is great.
Yeah.
The funny thing I learned from this trip, I said in the beginning what was kind of the catalyst for this trip was that I wanted to discover where I wanted to live.
Yeah.
And the funny thing was that I actually realized that I enjoy the nomadic lifestyle more than I want to be in one place. So I kind of became really interested in trying to make that work. I'm still trying to talk Airstream into giving me a trailer. So.
Well, you're always home.
Exactly.
Even though you're never anywhere in particular, you're always home.
Yep.
Which is a great feeling, and it's a... I don't know. It sounds like you've been moving in your life anyway. That feeling of once you leave your family's home, you're looking for one.
Yep.
And, you know, Tiff and I have been on this perennial search for an address that I think at this point is our address.
Right.
The searching for an address
exactly.
is where we live, you know?
It's the journey.
Mm-hmm.
The nice thing that I realized with the trailer, or say if you're traveling with a van, is that sense of familiarity. You have your little cocoon that is home, and as opposed to when I used to do, or when previous solo road trips, I was bouncing from hotel to hotel, and then you'd get over it quicker. Like, yeah. Okay, I need a sense of familiarity. So that's the nice thing about a trailer or mm-hmm. a van is that you're home wherever, no matter where you are.
Yeah. Did you experience any kind of like creepy shit or weird things or scary stuff that freaked you out?
People always ask me that. I guess I don't know why. On all of my solo road trips, I've never had any like creepy guy following me or whatever, or just got a bad sense. I guess maybe intuitively I know what situations to avoid ahead of time. But even I think the scariest situations for me personally with the trailer trip is just if I was camping off the grid where there's no one else around, say like someone pulled up in the middle of the night and saw this car and trailer in the middle of the woods and decided to try and see who's inside.
Right.
Those were the only situations where I kind of psyched myself out. But besides that, knock on wood,
right.
I haven't come across a situation where I felt uncomfortable, because you are vulnerable as a young female traveling through places. And especially I've considered if someone notices like, oh, that girl's traveling alone, I'm going to follow her and see where she stops type of thing. But I've had other female friends of mine have had bad experiences, but for some reason, I guess it's just, I don't have that, I don't attract that sort of activity.
Well, I mean, so we get those types questions in that vein, not necessarily like if you had creepy people following you around, because my wife kind of has a creepy person driving her around.
Oh, please.
But you're as vulnerable to that, if not more so, at home.
Right.
You know, and like in a city like LA of millions of people.
Completely.
Just going home by yourself, you're still a solo female traveler.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Unless you're not solo, you're kind of always a solo female traveler.
Yes, exactly. And with what I'm doing, the hope is to encourage other females that, because there is such a stigma against females traveling alone, whether it's a road trip or flying somewhere. So the hope is to encourage other people. Like, it's not as dangerous as people might think, but at the end of the day, you need to have a good head on your shoulders.
Right.
You need to be able to, I don't know, do your own thing and
make a good decision.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's the thing with us. We get that same sort of, is everything, aren't you worried about this in Mexico or this and that, which, yeah, of course. I mean,
right.
But I'm also worried about, you know, a texting driver.
Right. Oh,
like
completely.
We've nearly been killed on the road just here, you know, just oh God, yeah, people flying over hills, and you know, I mean, there's our dog almost died, you know, I mean, like there's been all these little things that like you're never really totally safe from any sort of danger, and the to think that you are, that you aren't in any case is misguided, you know, you just gotta try to do your best, make your best decision, and you know.
I'm more scared of being stagnant and not being happy than what I might come across while I'm on these trips.
Totally.
I mean, that's the biggest fear for me is not living a life that feels fulfilling to me.
Yeah, not even dying in that cubicle, living in that cubicle, you know, and then just someday crapping out.
Right,
you know,
like, exactly. But it takes a certain type of person. It's not for everyone. Like sometimes I'm envious of the people who are still living in the same town I grew up in and have a family and they're happy doing that. And I'd have no judgment. I pass no judgment like, oh, you're living a boring life. I'm like, oh, you just accept and appreciate this simple life, and sometimes I'm jealous of that.
Totally.
Like I wish I was cool with that sometimes, but no.
Like I'll get in someone's car, they have like a nice car, you know, like, oh man, this is a fucking nice car, I'm like driving this thing. I drove somebody's BMW the other day, and like, wow, and they have a house and a BMW.
Yeah,
it's like, well, those seem nice, you know, it seems cool, but it's nice to like appreciate those. And then it's like, for me, it's like kids.
Yeah.
You know, like, I love to like pet them and talk to them and hear about their stories and, you know, share food with them and then watch them go, you know, like go back with your mom.
Yeah.
Like
borrow a kid for a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great. But I don't know that I would want one, you know, I know for certain I don't want a child. I would rather have a BMW than a child, I guess. That's what I'm saying.
One requires a little less responsibility.
Yeah. Yeah. One's way less expensive. But
yes. It's very true, actually.
So yeah, the danger thing, the travel thing, it's, I mean, it can be scary, but it's not, to encourage people to do it. It's good that there are people in cubicles, I guess, doing the jobs that need to be done.
Someone needs to do it.
It's good. And that there are personalities who are fine with it.
Yeah.
It's totally fine.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to become increasingly aware of like not even just sounding judgmental, because I don't intend to judge anybody, because I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. Who am I to judge anybody for anything?
Exactly.
But like, I don't want to make it sound like I decry someone's choice to be like, to stay where they are and do what they like. I mean, that's fantastic.
Exactly.
I'll come visit them. Yeah. I'll come see you, and I'll learn from you something. So I'm glad they're there. I'm glad they're doing it. But for me, I would rather die.
Yeah, well,
I'd rather die.
Going along with that, like, I'm not strictly an advocate for you need to go out and travel and live this nomadic, spontaneous lifestyle. Yeah. I'm an advocate for finding what makes you happy and doing that. And if that means sitting in a cubicle and you're supporting your family and you're comfortable, awesome. Yeah. Cool. Do that.
For sure.
Great.
Well, talk to me a little bit about photography. What are you shooting? Are you doing digital? Do you have film? Do you do black and whites?
I haven't
seen any of it.
I know.
Let me take that back. I have seen your Bombay Beach book.
Okay.
In Bombay Beach at Tao's place.
That is not representative of my. That was a very cool project. I can go into that later if you want. But I shoot mostly digital. All of my career choices have been guided by something I was passionate about, which didn't end up being the career. So to explain that is like, I wanted to be a graphic designer because my world revolved around snowboarding, and I knew I wouldn't make money as a female professional snowboarder, and also didn't want to sacrifice my body for career, and just didn't want to go down that path. So I chose graphic design to be involved in snowboarding still and be able to live that lifestyle. And photography over the years, travel became my main passion, and I recognized that, if I'm a photographer, that could be an opportunity to travel. So now my camera has just become my ticket to experience the world. And I'm not a crazy photo nerd. Like, I don't get crazy technical. I don't use flashes. Like, I shoot mainly like natural light, outdoors. And it's just been my ticket to experience new places and people. It's my tool to live the lifestyle I want to live, really.
Yeah. For me, like, I've had a lot of jobs, and one of them was photography.
Oh, really?
I did portraiture, like weddings. Mm-hmm. And I would go around in high school. I was the like showing up at fraternity and sorority parties and taking, you know, the candid camera, sort of candid shots of people.
Yeah.
And then I did like cheerleading camps. And as like a 16-year-old dude, I would hop in my car on the weekend and drive to New Orleans.
You got to shoot a bunch of cheerleaders, though, as a 16-year-old kid. That must have been the best thing ever.
Well, for me, I was way more into their moms.
Yeah.
But whatever. That's a whole, other, whole story that we don't have to go into. But like, I would drive from Memphis, you know, from Mississippi, to like Atlanta or to New Orleans or to Dallas, because I wasn't old enough to rent a car.
Right.
I was like, you know, just, and if I flew somewhere, it was like a little weird.
Yeah.
But that was my job from like 16 or 17 to like.
How cool.
But so then I thought of myself, I fancied myself as some sort of photographer, and there was no digital at the time. It was really expensive. It was too, so like film was, you know, buying film all the time and getting developed, and I wasn't very good. Like,
no.
I feel like I'm a creative person, but I'm not a photographer.
Okay. You know?
So now when I with traveling, like Tiffany takes most of the pictures. I like to take them occasionally, but to me, I get distracted in the photographing instead of just actually experiencing where I am. So how do you work that? Like, you're there to take photos, but like, there's also like, you want to be there. You want to take that hike. You want to walk around.
Yeah, it's kind of a catch 22. In some situations, if I'm shooting people, I guess the camera can be a distraction as much as it can be a tool to allow you to experience new things. So if I'm traveling and I'm stuck behind a camera, sometimes you need to realize that you need to put it down and really appreciate your surroundings. But because of photography, it's forced me to see the world in a completely different way and appreciate it in a way that I wouldn't have otherwise. So for me, photography it's been a catalyst to be present and really take in my surroundings. And also, as a shy kid growing up, I started doing the event stuff too, like shooting photos at parties, and it was kind of my safety blanket at the camera. I could interact with people that I wouldn't normally interact with if I didn't have it. So absolutely. It was an incredible icebreaker. And that's been the case through my entire career, because a lot of my work that I get paid to do is very commercial. So like mm-hmm. I worked for Nike I did a bunch of shoots for Nike, like got to go to Scotland and shoot Tiger Woods.
Wow.
And so those commercial jobs, I'm nervous going into every one of them. Mm-hmm. But it puts me in a situation where it doesn't have to be necessarily photography, but you learn and you grow. Yeah. Especially as a shy person, I get put in these situations where I have to be leading the charge and telling Tiger Woods what to do, type of thing.
What a sweet treat for Tiger Woods to be guided by you. You know what I mean? Like, because I can only imagine what that dude's world is like.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know, to have like a genuine lady come in who's like, hey, I really love photography.
Yeah.
And I work for Nike.
Yeah.
And you're, you know.
Yeah, you're a huge, I'm sure he's used, photography is a male-dominated industry, I'm sure. Yeah. I did shoot sports for quite a while, and it was an interesting balance shooting these kind of burly male athletes.
Yeah.
And coming from my position to have authority in that situation and yeah. get them to trust me and to know that I'm going to make them look good is an interesting kind of power dynamic.
For sure. I mean, yeah. I noticed yesterday, I don't think it's just the jumpsuit that made me feel like you're a sporty type of person, because you jump around a lot and you tend to run between destinations, which I think is great. But like, now I can see, like, I'm just trying to picture that dynamic of you showing up mm-hmm. at like a sort of male dominated sort of yeah. thing. You definitely project like a confidence, or not, I don't know if projecting confidence sounds like you've taken some sort of Tony Robbins course or something, but you just seem like naturally at ease.
I'm comfortable in my own skin.
Yeah.
And as far as sports goes, I grew up as a complete jock.
Yeah.
I played every sport every season. So in that, if I went into those situations where I had to shoot sports and knew absolutely nothing about what it is that the athlete has to do, then I'd probably be a little bit more timid.
Yeah.
When I can speak to these athletes, like, oh, can you stretch your calf this way, or can you swing the bat? Like, I know what's involved, and I'm not just like some outsider.
Right. You're not having them in some weird pose that they would never be in.
Exactly. Ever. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
That's cool. Wow.
Yeah.
So you're doing a mix of nature photography, people, commercial stuff.
I do a little bit of everything. Like, I've shot fashion, I shoot sports. My personal work is more travel oriented. Mm-hmm. Just kind of all across the board. And it's a tough line to walk, because some people say you need to have a focus and get good at one thing. But for me, I would never say no to a shoot, because even if it's kind of a subject matter that I might not be that interested in, mm-hmm. I think that provides even a more of a creative challenge to find a way to take this thing that you don't really care about. Say you're shooting cookies, and you find a way to still create photos that you're proud of and you're happy with. Those are the situations that push you a little more.
That's a healthy attitude that I think draws across what we were just talking about, like the nomadic thing and the person who's stayed and true and doing their thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to be able to find the through line of things that like aren't just, like a phrase I say all the time, it can't just be tits and champagne all the time. You know, there's sometimes when it's drudgery or it's some thing you don't want to do.
Yeah.
But that you take that line of like, okay, well, I'll just find something in this
exactly.
that I like.
Right.
You know, that's something everybody can do, whether you're in, you know, in your weird van with your weird dog, or you're sitting in the cubicle.
Which it's also a fine line to walk, because if you have that attitude and you're stuck doing something you actually don't want to do and try and find that that glimmer of hope in it, and you stay in that situation, I don't know, it's a fine line to walk. And now I'm at this point with my photography career that I've been doing commercial work for the past 6 years, and that's the longest I've held any kind of single profession. Now I'm kind of getting bored, and there's less of that I'll find the good thing to do in this. Now I'm like, okay, what, I kind of feel like I've done this, what can I do next to kind of challenge myself?
Well, there's a difference between like a cudgel and a rut.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Using that like, I'll find the best of this situation as like a thing to spring off of is one thing.
Right.
But using it as like a numbing agent,
mm-hmm.
whole different thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So tell me about the Bombay thing. What was that?
So have you interviewed Tao?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So Tao, he has this thing out in the desert, Bombay Beach Biennale, where it's a small kind of rundown desert town right on the edge of Salton Sea. It feels post-apocalyptic. I mean, you've been there, you know the mm-hmm. scene there. But he throws this kind of art gathering every year, and they kind of find the beauty in the ruins and put art installations in a lot of the lots out there. But he had this idea to kind of glorify the destruction there, and he asked me if I'd come to Bombay Beach for 2 weeks and shoot the properties throughout the town in a way that it's like shooting them as if it was like a house and dwell kind of thing, like making it very clean and perfect, but when you look at it, there's like graffiti and just it and run down yeah. houses. So I spent 2 weeks walking down every street from sunrise to sunset, just like stopping, looking at each property. It completely retrained my eye, because I don't normally shoot much architectural stuff. So I would notice things that I would never notice before, whether it was the shadows or the lines in a house or the angles. Or it was a very interesting creative exercise, because again, that's something I wouldn't normally be compelled to shoot on my own. And after doing that project, I went back to LA and completely saw LA in a different way. I would notice all these things that I wouldn't have noticed before, whether it was the color of a siding on a house or shadows, or it was very interesting. I've kind of lost that now, but I think subconsciously it's still there.
Yeah. Do you wonder, like I look at stuff like that and wonder, because I've built things and mostly repaired things, and mm-hmm. you wonder what was intentional and what, you know, like I just picked that color because I like that color, or I right. picked this beam, like especially when light and time of day and time season of year interact mm-hmm. with a physical structure.
Oh yeah,
I'm always wondering like what. Like, when was this built? Was right. it the time of year? Was it built in the spring mm-hmm. when the sun is about this angle? And, like, is that why they wanted it? So that sunset would do this weird shadow? You know, that
exactly.
Did you find any of that sort of stuff in Bombay?
In Bombay, I don't know if the stuff out there is that considered.
Yeah.
But it's kind of, like, beautiful chaos. Because mm-hmm. I think once you stare at something long enough, you begin to see the beauty in it. And that definitely happened on that trip. It was a cool creative experience for me.
Can imagine.
Yeah.
Can imagine. So what are you working on right now? Are you on break?
I'm in this, as I mentioned, I'm kind of in this weird transition where I don't exactly know what my next step is. It's funny, I can attribute every step of my career to someone I was trying to impress or make happy, which I ended up loving the things that I was doing, but I could tell you that I originally got interested in graphic design from the get-go because I was dating someone who was a graphic designer, or snowboarding, I was dating a professional snowboarder. Like, there was a very interesting underlying thing of I was trying to impress or make certain people proud. And as I'm 28 now, which isn't, I'm not a wise person by any means. I still have a lot of learning to do. But as I've gotten older, I've kind of put down that thought that I need to make other people happy besides myself. And so now, for the first time in my life, that I'm not trying to impress anyone else, the hardest question for me to answer is like, okay, Laura, what do you want? So that's the kind of transition I'm currently stuck in, like sitting and trying to figure out exactly what that is. Like, it will involve photography in some way, but I'm just trying to figure out what that next iteration of my career is going to be now that I'm trying to figure out what I really want.
That is such a heavy question. It sounds real simple. What do you want? Like, because it's asked so casually. Yeah. What do you want for breakfast? Like, I don't know, fucking eggs or something. Right. But it is like, what do you want? I mean, you've got just so much time. I don't know if you've experienced a lot of death and family and that sort of thing, or
not a ton. Remember. I've been fortunate, not a ton. Like my grandmother died recently, but besides that, I haven't experienced a lot of death around me.
Well, just even like, if you don't mind, I don't know if it's too close or too soon, to like to consider your grandmother,
right?
Like to look back on her life and what she went through.
Right.
She was a little girl.
Yeah,
she was a woman. Right. You know, in her 20s and then 30s, and like, her currency, really, when you take it all back, was just time.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one thing she could trade in.
Right.
You know? And if you were to be able to, like, converse with your grandmother right now on mm-hmm. the other side of this, you're like, okay, grandma, lay it on me. Don't tell me what's on the other side. It's cool. But, like,
yeah.
with time, am I doing okay on time? You know? And that question comes up of, like, well, what do you want?
Right.
You know? That is a... It's an enormous question.
It's
an enormous question.
When you sit down trying to make other people happy or kind of forget, money isn't really a part of my equation. It should be more of a part of my equation. But I'm not thinking about, okay, what's going to make me the most money? Like I don't have a family I need to support. I'm pretty financially stable. So I have this time to kind of figure out, okay, what's the next thing I want to do? And honestly, it's the hardest question I've ever had to try and answer when you take away those kind of stipulations that yeah. people normally base their career off of.
Yeah. yeah. Well, like people have asked, like, okay, if money were just not an issue
right.
and you just had all the money you wanted, what would you do with your time? Like, well, that's, you know, I mean, just driving around in a big Cadillac with bull horns on the front. And
yeah.
like, pistols that shoot yogurt, you know, that's ridiculous. That's
right.
what I would do. I would be an absurd person.
Pistols that shoot yogurt.
I don't know. I would be an absurd person.
Stay away from me. I'm lactose intolerant. That's actually like a deadly thing
so
coming
dangerous.
Out of there.
But like that, I don't know. What I'm saying is like the absurdity of not having to worry about money.
Yeah.
For me
mm-hmm.
is it's an unfair way to think about it. But as far as like how I spend my time, I just refuse to do anything that for a long period of time that I just don't want to do.
Right.
Like I've had many, many jobs and I've had only a few for very, very brief periods of time that
mm-hmm.
I didn't want to do. And at some point I just didn't want to do every job that I've ever done.
Right, exactly.
And then I no longer did it and I did
yeah.
something else.
Right.
And so, insofar as like knowing what I want, I don't know that I'll necessarily ever have that
yeah.
answered fully, but I'm perfectly willing to spend my time trying to figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a worthwhile thing, like spending time trying to figure out what it is that you want.
Yeah.
You know,
as with Road Trip, it's all part of the journey. So I'm kind of taking a more submissive stance and just kind of sitting back, not sitting back too much, because then you just really won't do anything. But I'm trying to, I want to be struck over the head, like, this is what you should do, which that isn't necessarily what happens, but I'm willing to, like, sit back and kind of let it naturally mm-hmm. evolve into whatever it should be, yeah. I guess.
Well, I'm for that. I think, I mean, you just seem like the kind of person to me in the less than 24 hours that I've known you, that, like, you don't seem afraid of shit.
Yeah.
That, I mean, you probably are, like, afraid of things like everybody else, but you're not afraid to try stuff.
Right.
And... like looking, like we played music together last
mm-hmm.
night, which was so much fun. It was like the most, I felt like, it felt like playing.
Yeah.
It was play.
We were totally playing.
It was totally play.
Yeah.
Like we're kids or something with toys, you know?
Right.
And that sort of like
inhibited,
but yeah. like you're not judging yourself.
Right. Oh, yeah.
You know, you can't roll around in a mustardish colored jumpsuit and judging yourself, you know,
right,
like
yeah.
that's, so you're set up to be, you're like a science experiment out there having, you know,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, one of the mottos I kind of live by is that fear kills more dreams than failure ever will.
Hmm.
So if you try something and fail, you'll learn more, gain more out of it than you if you just sit back and wonder what if, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm probably fearless to a fault, but so far it's worked out in my favor. I've never been I think a lot to do with my parents and seeing them be able to turn whatever they were passionate about into a career. I've never been afraid to jump off that cliff and think that the wind isn't going to catch me. So far it has, but also with that mentality, I think you can't have one foot in the door and one foot out. You can't be working one career and like secretly want to do something else and kind of dabble in it
totally.
Until you fully commit yourself to that thing. It's not going to work out.
I would highly consider it. I've never plugged our show on the show,
mm-hmm.
but there's a guest of ours that I'd really like you to listen to, a guy named Ricardo Serpa.
Okay.
Who is a delightful, beautiful voice. He's this guy from Brazil,
yeah.
lives in Miami. He's a wonderful photographer.
Okay, cool.
And he's got an analogy for that. It's so perfect with like, a person on a dock and a boat.
Okay.
And like, you know, having one foot on the boat, one foot on the dock, you know,
you're not going to go anywhere. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like you're in neither world,
right.
You know?
Exactly.
And if you think you're going to jump onto the boat before it leaves, you're not going to make it. So
right.
You're either on that boat or you're not.
Exactly.
Anyhow, he puts it much more eloquently than I do, and his voice is awesome. So it's worth listening to. But I think it's even more germane that he did photography. Photography was his leap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
same.
But
it's still like with everything, it's a catch 22 because I don't want to just say like drop everything and pursue whatever it is you're passionate about. Like I really like knitting, so I'm gonna make a career out of. It's just a weird line to walk because it might not work out for everyone. You need to be self-aware enough to realize like, oh, I'm decent at this, and it could work. You can't just blindly hop off that cliff. You need to have some foresight a little bit.
When I was 18, I moved out of my house at the moment I graduated from high school. Like, mm-hmm. Okay, love you guys, but I gotta go.
Yeah.
And one of the first things I did when I had my own refrigerator, I populated it with things that I thought I did not like, because I was just curious. Like, do I really not like olives?
Wow.
What do I? You know, because I'd grown up thinking, I don't like those. I don't like those. Like. I can put anything I want in here. I could just fill it with cookies or I could fill it with shit that I think I don't like. So I tried all the olives. I tried artichoke, things that I just, and I found that there's nothing that I don't like because I'm hungry all the time and I'll just eat anything. And it's sort of, I've used that as like a benchmark in my life to where like, you don't know what you don't like if you haven't tried it. And to try it isn't like to lick the olive and put it back in the jar. You got to eat the olive, man. You got to try the stuff and see, you know, how you feel about those sorts of things and like chew it and think about it.
Right.
It works that way with jobs.
Completely.
It works that way with adventures.
Mm-hmm.
It works that way with people you've met and dated and friends, all of it.
Right.
You just got to try.
Yeah, because you could jump off that cliff and it might not work out, but then you can go back to whatever it is that is safe or move on to the next thing. That's very...
Yeah, it's not like eating the olive that you don't like. That's going to be the last thing.
Yeah, that's, you're going to die.
You're only going to eat olives from now on.
Exactly.
You know, it's not like, you try. It's not like I've invested in an olive grove.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't put all my life savings into things I didn't like. I just was willing to invest a tiny amount into seeing if whether or not it would work.
You know? Right, but it's also difficult. I mean, it sounds like we're both fortunate in the situations that we were in to have the ability to try things. Some people can't take that
for
risk because
sure.
they have a family and they live paycheck to paycheck and they don't have that bubble to kind of fall back on.
No, I'm proudly vasectomized.
Yeah.
My Planned Parenthood gave it to me for free, which is a little weird. I was perfectly willing to pay and I never got a bill. I was like, what the fuck is that? Do you guys know something about me that I don't know? Like, it's like, oh, finally you're here. We've been waiting. You know, like,
crazy.
Anyway, sorry. But the whole opportunity, whether or not you can try this sort of stuff, absolutely. Like if if you got responsibilities, you got to take care of that for sure.
Yeah.
And Tiffany and I are lucky in that, or I don't know if lucky, we've just accidentally made the right choices for us.
You know, that's how I feel too.
Yeah. Happy accidents.
Happy accidents.
Indeed.
Exactly.
I want to say this without sounding creepy. I can't wait to take your picture of that jumpsuit.
Well, I'll happily throw it on.
Awesome.
Here.
Well, thank you so much for sitting with us, man.
Thank you. It was awesome. I mean, we're sitting in a boat in the desert and we're having lovely conversations, so I can't complain.
Indeed. Cheers.
Cool. Cheers.
Chimes! Tiffany here, saying thank you for listening to the Monkey Tooth Podcast. If you haven't already, or it's been a while, check out our website, mtp.dog. There's plenty of information there. An about tab with a little bio on Andrew, myself, and our dog Pele. There's also a van build tab detailing how we did our van conversion. A journal tab, and we, as in Andrew, are doing our best to keep that up to date. And last but not least, a contact tab, where you can leave your thoughts, suggestions, or questions. You can also contact us on social media. We are on Facebook and Instagram, Monkey Tooth Podcast. If you would like to donate and or subscribe to the cause, you can go to Patreon and GoFundMe at Monkey Tooth Podcast. Patreon is not just a place to subscribe. We post lots of content there as well. We greatly appreciate each and every one of you. Love to all.